the polls, Tommy. So they have to know about how the American people feel. I mean, even if you look at Democrat cities that are on the border that have flipped to Republican now. And still, after all of that, they won't listen to Henry Cuellar, a Democrat who has been encouraging the Biden administration to do something about the border. They won't listen to the polls. So do they just not care, or is their larger mission more important?
Yeah, the larger mission is to import their future voters. They know they're losing with the American people, so they want to pad their voting block. That's been my theory for years now. But the Biden administration is not going to change their policy. That's clear. So it's going to be up to governors, both Republican and Democrat, as you mentioned, Lawrence, to start making changes. Ron DeSantis has already vowed that he's going to spend money in his state to send these illegal immigrants to blue states. He's also going to make sure that those nonprofits and those private companies that are aiding and abetting this activity are also held accountable and paying restitution to the taxpayers that are footing the bill for all of this. So we need more governors like Ron DeSantis. I don't care if they have an R or a D behind their name. They need to stand up for their constituents, and they need to stand up for the American people.
I absolutely love that. Listening to Tommy Lahren again. Tommy Lahren, in fact, we brought her in to town for a speech out at, I think, Las Vegas Country Club. It was a lot of fun. God, we had so much fun with her. Stay with us. More to come as we continue. My name is Kevin Wall. So good to have you with us. Coming up, top of the hour, Scott Hammond, State Senator, Nevada District 18. I'm going to ask him about Annie Black and find out what he thinks about her running in CD4, which, by the way, got more Democrat via the census. They took it out of CD1 and moved it to CD4. We'll see what that's all about. We'll talk about the numbers. We'll do all that and more coming up as we continue on AM 670 KMZQ, where news is next.
I'm U.S. Senate candidate Adam Laxalt, and I'm proud to be supported by President Trump in this important race. The choice couldn't be clearer for gun owners. Catherine Cortez Masto and the Democrats want to take away our Second Amendment rights. Masto stood with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to roll back our concealed carry rights, and in 2019 she even sponsored legislation to impose a gun ban. That's why Masto is backed by radical anti-gun groups and was given an F rating by the NRA. As your senator, I'll be a champion for our Second Amendment. I've twice been endorsed by the NRA and most recently the Gun Owners of America. As Attorney General, I stood up for Nevadans' right to bear arms. I expanded our concealed carry rights and sued liberals who tried to take our gun rights away. And when the Democrats tried to pass red flag laws to limit our gun rights, I fought back. Nevadans can count on me to defend our Second Amendment. I'm Adam Laxalt, candidate for U.S. Senate, and I approve this message. Paid for by Laxalt for Senate, AdamLaxalt.com.
Broadcasting live from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip, AM 670 KMZQ Las Vegas. Locally owned and operated by Kemp Broadcasting and Digital Outdoor.
News this hour from townhall.com. I'm Jason Walker. Nightmare on I-95 in Virginia, where hundreds of motorists, some of them spending up to 15 hours overnight following an earlier accident. Many of those stranded did so without food, water, and their prescription meds. Truck driver Emily Slaughter was hauling produce.
It's frustrating for us on the part to where we can't get the load there at the scheduled time, because we're also losing money.
A Canadian court has ruled Iran should pay $107 million in punitive damages to the families of six people with Canadian citizenship or residency who were killed in the Iranian military's downing of a Ukrainian passenger plane nearly 2 years ago. The military shootdown of that plane with two surface-to-air missiles killed all 176 people on board. Also at townhall.com, OPEC and allied oil-producing countries are likely to press ahead with the restoring cutbacks in output made during the depths of the pandemic. Jeremy House has more.
It comes as hopes grow that travel and demand for fuel will hold up despite the rapid spread of the Omicron variant. The 23-member OPEC group meets online Thursday to decide production levels for February. Analysts say the group is likely to add 400,000 barrels per day for the month of February, sticking with the roadmap they have followed since August.
A federal judge in Texas granting a preliminary injunction stopping the Navy from acting against 35 sailors for refusing, on religious grounds, to comply with an order to get vaccinated. That injunction, a new challenge to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin's decision to make those vaccinations mandatory for all members of the armed forces. More on these stories at townhall.com.
Thinking about life insurance? What if you could make one free phone call and learn your best price from nearly a dozen highly rated price competitive companies? Well, that's exactly what happens when you call SelectQuote Life. For example, George is 40. He was getting sky-high quotes from other companies because he takes meds to control his blood pressure. But when I shopped around, I found him a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $25 a month. I'm SelectQuote agent Dan Savino. And believe me, if SelectQuote isn't shopping for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For a free quote, call 800-523-3771. That's 800-523-3771. 800-523-3771. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Both were prosecutors in the Clark County District Attorney's Office, each with 25 years of experience. One was chief of the Special Victims Unit, the other chief of the Homicide Unit. Both dedicated, both respected. Together, they are Craig Hendricks and Frank Como, the Vegas Dream Team for criminal defense you need in your corner. Call 702-222-9999 or visit VegasDreamTeam.com, a division of DeCastro Verde Law Group.
This is Lee Habib, and I get asked all the time why we do all of those segments on Our American Stories about people who found the American dream. And we do it because it's true. This country has great stories to tell, and we tell them on this station every night, because one thing I've learned is this: there's an American story in all of us. Join me for Our American Stories right here.
Heard nightly, Monday through Friday, 10 p.m. to midnight, and Sunday, 9 a.m. to noon, only on AM 670. It's 204, and this is your KMZQ News Flash, powered by DeCastro Verde Law Group. If you've been injured, their family will fight for yours. I'm Jim Dallas. With demand for COVID-19 testing soaring, local health officials say people with mild or no symptoms at all of COVID-19 are crowding the already busy Las Vegas area emergency rooms. Local health experts say many are just looking for COVID-19 tests, could just as easily recover at home without any medical care. Health officials are asking people to avoid visits to local emergency rooms for non-urgent medical needs. Weather-related and COVID-19-induced worker shortages caused more than 3,000 flight cancellations across the country just yesterday. As CES is getting ready to begin here in Las Vegas, Reed International Airport had 74 cancellations, with the airport's busiest carrier, Southwest, having the most at 22. Well, Diamond Dave's retirement party has been called off. David Lee Roth has now canceled his entire run at the House of Blues at Mandalay Bay. Those shows were scheduled to run this past weekend through the end of the month. There's been no formal reason given for those cancellations, but refunds will automatically be issued.
KMCQ on-time traffic is powered by Meineke Car Care Centers.
Come in now and get up to $50 off brake pads or shoes and a lifetime warranty.
Well, you've been bumper-to-bumper heading into the Spaghetti Bowl there because there's a crash 15 northbound at D Street. The right lanes are blocked, and you're backed up all the way past Sahara there on Interstate 15 northbound, and you'll tap the brakes there, 515 eastbound at Main Street.
I want you to know that the movement we started is only just beginning. There's never been anything like it. The belief that a nation must serve its citizens will not dwindle. but instead only grow stronger by the day. As long as the American people hold in their hearts deep and devoted love of country, then there is nothing that this nation cannot achieve. I go from this majestic place with a loyal and joyful heart, an optimistic spirit, and a supreme confidence that for our country and for our children, the best is yet to come.
It ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning is done.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Wall.
And this hour of Live and Local brought to you in part by New Hope Tax Defense. If you've gotten that dreaded registered letter from the IRS stating that you owe the government tens of thousands of dollars in back taxes, I want you to call New Hope Tax Defense at 702-483-0220. That's 702-483-0220. Make that call right now. Now, I am always happy to have him on, but especially as we begin a brand new year here on Live and Local. Scott Hammond, State Senator, Nevada District 18. How'd you spend New Year's Eve?
I spent it shuttling my kids everywhere and then at home. I mean, it's just like every other father with teenagers. You need to go where? Okay, so it's that I'm here, so I'm there, having a good time. So that's how we did our New Year's Eve. I don't think I went to bed until like 2 o'clock in the morning, which is really sad because I tried to get up at 5 o'clock to play basketball.
Wow. Wow. I want to ask you, taking a look back at 2021, your impressions. We had a legislative session, obviously, and that's all well and good. It could have been a lot worse, but it was pretty bad. Can you talk a little bit about 2021 and what you'll remember about 2021?
Well, again, I think 2021 will be remembered as the year that we tried to live with COVID. And again, I think we keep failing because we haven't come to grips with the fact that it's going to be around. And I think now we are starting to go, hey, it's going to be around. But 2021 was about trying to think that we could get it, you know, eradicate it. And, you know, there's a lot of shaming going on, continue to go on, people looking at other people, shaming them, saying you're not doing your part, and the quite opposite, right? Everybody's doing what they possibly can, according to the information we're getting. We had one special session, one regular session. And in the end, I think that we kept learning that we can't keep doing this to businesses, changing rules all the time, making it harder to conduct business here in the state of Nevada. We certainly can't keep doing this to the police officers and the police force here in the state of Nevada or elsewhere across the country. We can't talk about defunding or unfunding completely our police force and then expecting the citizenry just to police themselves all the time. It doesn't happen. We're not all angels. I wish we were, but you can't keep talking about that. So these are some of the trends that I'm hoping we see a reversal of in the near future. I think that people are kind of waking up to the fact that, we have lofty ideas, but, we also have to live with ourselves and live within ourselves and understand how to live as a community. So that's what I learned during that 2021.
It has certainly changed education, K through 12, obviously, but even that non-binding vote on higher education, keeping the mandates in place. The universities are saying, I think, that they want to keep the mandate for staff as well. Can you talk a little bit about that non-binding vote?
Yeah, so again, I really don't think that mandates are constitutionally protected. I just don't think that, government can be telling people exactly how to do this. I know that in the past we've said, hey, in order to go to school, you need to have this shot and that shot, and I get that. We've had that, there's a precedence for that when something actually does what it says. When we were talking about polio, this is what was brought up during our meeting not too long ago, a couple of weeks ago. This was a legislative commission meeting that we had, where we had to review one of the policies that were brought forth by the health district that said that NC students, before they could go back to campus, had to be immunized. And so we had to actually make it permanent, or at least that was what we were being asked to do. And we didn't do it. It was a 6-6 vote and went down. And the reason why it went down, one, wording. I mean, they weren't asking that everybody get vaccinated. They were asking that everybody have proof of immunization. Well, you that's the difference between this and, let's say, polio. You know, if you get the vaccine, the polio vaccine, that the chances are that you're immunized from that for your life. This is not true now. You could be vaccinated, and by the way, just so people know, and I'm very clear about this, you can be pro-vaccination but anti-mandate. And I think I've made myself very clear about that in the past, but I'll continue to say that. I myself did get vaccinated because I felt like the information was there for me, and I felt like that was the right move for me to make. As a 55-year-old male, I felt like I needed to get vaccinated. But it's a different story when I'm talking about my 10-year-old daughter or maybe my 14-year-old daughter. We've had different conversations. And so, you know, to mandate everybody take something that does not actually guarantee immunization, I thought that was the wrong step to make. So I voted no. And you can ask some of these members of Congress who have been immunized. And I know they've gotten the booster shots and they're still getting COVID-19. It's because the vaccine doesn't necessarily give you immunization from COVID. It certainly can mitigate the effects or diminish the likelihood that you'll end up in the hospital or even worse. So I know that there are some benefits to it, but for those who do take it, and I'm talking about those professors out there who are very angry about the decision, they did get the vaccine. A lot of them who are talking to me got the vaccine. They have mitigated against the effects that might occur to them. But students, a lot of these younger students who aren't feeling the really bad effects of COVID-19, they're making choices. And a lot of them don't want to get the vaccine, and to mandate them to get the vaccine, I thought that was wrong.
Hey, Scott, let me just ask you, though, just on balance, vaccines... Well, I guess I keep looking at this. You look at all the NBA players and the NHL players and the Major League Baseball players and the NFL players, and they're all getting vaccinated, and yet they are still every day on TV, on ESPN, you see a list on the bottom of the screen of folks that tested positive, players that and coaches and general managers that tested positive after being fully vaccinated and boosted. Is it possible the science is wrong?
Well, we're finding that out all the time. Since March of 2020, I hate to use the word wrong. I just think that they keep finding out more and more. They're discovering more and more about how the virus acts, how it's reacting within us. And so we're getting more information all the time. You know, at the beginning, it was stay home and let's slow the spread of the virus, which we did. And I think a lot of us said, yeah, we can do that because we don't know much about it. And let's give people, doctors, scientists, time to learn a little bit more and figure out how we can live with it. I think now we're at that point where we know a little bit more about it. We're getting information, and we're going to have to live with this. It's going to be around for a while. We're going to have, you know, probably year to year, make decisions on whether or not we want to get a vaccination or a booster or whatever you're going to call it in the future, based on our circumstances, our own individual circumstances. So I think that's going to happen in the future. But, yeah, I if anybody tells you they've got all the information, right, and I'm getting those emails, right, hey, you know, tell me why you voted no, and I'll tell you why you were wrong because I've got all the right information. I keep getting those emails.
Wow. Interesting. Joining us, as he does every week, Scott Hammond, State Senator, Nevada District 18. I want to ask you about something that happened yesterday, and I guess they're going to announce it formally today. Annie Black running in CD4, trying to unseat Stephen Horsford. She didn't caucus with the Republicans, and I guess my question is, what do you make of her candidacy in CD4, and what has happened to that district via redistricting?
First of all, let's take the district itself and what happened during redistricting. It got a little more Democrat, I guess, but obviously it's still probably even more enticing than it was before because it may not have the numbers, the staunch numbers, I guess, those who were, you know, definitely committed Democrats. And so I think it might be enticing to people, as did some of the other districts as well. I know Dina Tyson's district became a district, that's District 1, that became a little more enticing to folks. It really, you know, some Republicans are like, hey, I if I play my cards right, if I do this or that, and they have to have a really good strategy going in, and they have to implement that strategy, you know, to effect, they might actually win. This is a, you know, opportunity. That's probably why you see her jumping. And I'm talking about Andy Black jumping ship, getting out of the assembly, out of the state legislature, and taking a shot at running for U.S. House of Representatives. Because she probably sees that as enticing, that if she has a good plan and she implements it, she might actually win. She's got several other people in that race, in that primary.
Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating primary. 41% are Democrat registered, 28% for Republicans, and 24% nonpartisan. That means, by my math, and I wasn't a math major at the University of Kansas, but it tells me 52% are either GOP or unaffiliated voters, 52 to 41% Democrats. And is that something we're going to see a lot of over the course of the next 10 years, that we're going to see more of these unaffiliated voters making it to where both the Republicans and the Democrats are kind of minority parties?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Here's what I keep seeing. We see more and more people not declaring either Democrat or Republican. They're declaring nonpartisan. That is actually the default when you go to the DMV, because, you know, they automatically register people now at the DMV. It was something that the Democrats had passed, I think, in 2019. And so when they go to register, if they don't put anything down, the automatic registration is nonpartisan. But that's not a majority of the people. A majority of the people know that they're registering, and they know that they're not registering Republican. They know they're not registering Democrat. They're voting nonpartisan because more and more people are looking at candidates. They want to go with the candidate and not necessarily the party. Party politics is actually kind of waning a little bit right now, which is why when we just finished with redistricting, I thought it was a disservice, because when they redistricted, the Democrats made sure that a lot of the districts reflected Democratic majorities instead of really factoring in the nonpartisans and the Republicans. There should have been a third split of all those different entities, Republican, Democrat, nonpartisan, independent, so that those districts reflected the, you know, the attitude of those people out there who are registering, and they didn't do that. However, even though that didn't happen during redistricting, it's going to happen. You know, the independents, nonpartisans, they're going to have a huge effect on the election, not only this election, but for the next 10 years, they're going to have a huge impact on a lot of districts, and candidates are going to have to appeal to them. They're going to have to go after those nonpartisans and find a way to get them to vote for them. And if they can do that, they're going to have success. And that's, again, why you're going to see people like Annie Black and others in districts that traditionally have been very Democrat. They're going to go after these Democrats because they think that they can appeal to some of these nonpartisans who just want to see a candidate appeal to the nonpartisan vote. Hey, I'm going to do something for the people instead of doing things for the party.
Do we know who these people are? Do we know what it is they want? I'm talking about the unaffiliated. In this case, in the CD4 race, 52% are either unaffiliated or Republicans. Do we know who they are and what it is they want?
Well, some people will say they do. Some people will say, look, we've done enough polling. We know who these people are. We know what their concerns are. So I think that you can message to them. You can actually appeal to them. But I think we're going to find out a whole lot more, kind of like COVID, right? We're finding out more and more every day about how that works and reacts. And I think we're going to find over the next 10 years exactly who these folks are that are leaving the party and really are looking into. The good thing is these guys are looking into politics as if they've never looked into it before. They really want to study the candidates. They really want to study the issues. That hasn't happened for the most part in my lifetime. You know, you have a lot of people who are just kind of, you know, they were Republican when they were growing up, or their parents were, and their parents are Democrat, and they just kind of followed that flow. And then, you know, now they're kind of saying, well, why am I thinking like this? So they're a little bit more educated as they get more into policy. So you as a candidate can appeal to them, but you're going to have to know your stuff.
Explain what's going to happen. We've just crossed over to a new year. It is a midterm election year. And talk a little bit about the dates and what happens relative to all of these people that are going to be running for office. And they say they're running, but they can't file and they can't take back the filing.
No.
Although we've already seen some candidates change races.
Yeah, absolutely. That's because filing doesn't occur until March. And I think it's around March 18th or 19th. I don't know the dates for sure now, but typically it's around the middle of March where filing ends. And then once filing ends, that's it. You can't change where you want to run. You can certainly try and drop out because there's still that timeline to drop out. But then there's also a timeline. There's a time in which you can't drop out of a race. Your name will go on the ballot because the Secretary of State has to get the ballots ready. But March is a pivotal time because all these people who are out there saying, hey, I'm going to run, they have to file. And so there's the first day of filing, and then it's about 2 weeks. And then after that two-week period, that's it. You're done. It's always, I've been around now for a while, and some really crazy things happen on that last day of filing. I've seen some people drop out of a race to enter a different race, and then other people fill their spot. I've seen people, just drop out completely and not run at all. So it's always interesting that last day. I like to see the pieces moving around and see who's going where. I'm always shocked that there's always one person who I never even thought was going to get in until they figured out, I think that this is it. This is a good race for me. And they jump in the last second.
Wow. Wow. Tell me what's going on with the Teletown Halls.
I think we're going to do one in about 2 weeks. I think we want to try and get one because we had to slow things down because I got ill right when we were trying to get one of them done. But we want to do one on, actually talked about crime and policing earlier, and that's one of the ones I really want to do. I want to get more people's opinion on what's going on in their own communities and how they feel and what they'd like to see happen, changes or what they'd like to see reinstated. And so that is one that we'll be doing pretty soon.
Hey, Scott, what I love is when people run into me and they have you in common, the talk always goes to the Teletown Hall and that you're more than willing to talk to not only folks in 18, but folks around the state, and that they glom onto this thing. They want information. They want to interact. Can you talk a little bit about your attitude about these Teletown Halls and what you bring to the party?
Well, look, I'm elected in Senate District 18, but, once you get in, you don't represent just the people of 18. You have to take into consideration everybody in the whole state, and I love getting to know people. That's one of the, we all have gifts and talents, and one of mine is I love sitting down and talking to people. I love them telling me. I like spending time with where they get a chance to talk and just having them tell me how they feel or whether they look, what are their goals, what are their aspirations in life, or what are they worried about, what are their concerns? I love that. And so I love the Teletown Halls because it gives everybody who wants to come in and call, gives them a chance. I remember it wasn't too long ago, when I send everybody a message saying, hey, this is your state senator, Scott Hammond, please join me for a Teletown Hall. Somebody took the time to tweet at me and say, hey, thank you very much, but I am not in your district, and you are not my state senator. And I'm like, geez, really? You took the time to tweet that out? Like they're angry because I said this is your state senator. Guys, it's okay. We all are out there trying to communicate with everybody, and it's okay. You can call in. It's all right if you call in and tell me, hey, I'm not your constituent, but this is how I feel, because I'm more than willing to listen to you guys. I just can't believe that somebody would actually take the time to tweet out that particular anger, it's like, move on.
I love that. Hey, Scott, always good to have you on. Thank you so much, my friend. Next week, we should have a date and time for the next Teletown Hall.
Yep, we should.
Okay, sounds good. You have a great week, and we'll talk again next week, okay?
Always good to hear from you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Scott. To you and your family. Scott Hammond, State Senator, Nevada District 18, joining us right here on AM 670 KMZQ.
Talking about the news of the day need not be toxic or boring. Hey, it's Rob Carson. Join me weeknights from 6 to 8 for a unique and fun look at politics and pop culture. It's the Rob Carson Show on AM 670 KMZQ, talk radio done right.
If you live long enough, you've experienced the same thing. A certified letter arrives from the IRS. Hey, Kevin Wall here.